So I'm really, really excited about today's guest. It is a bonus guest because we've been doing these every week, but going to do two this week. And to be able to speak to an NFL quarterback, someone who's actually played with and against some of the most iconic names and teams all across the American Football League. So this is going to be really, really exciting to pick the brains of someone who's been so successful in such a competitive sport. Really looking forward to it. So without further ado, let's get straight into the episode. Now, today's guest played in the NFL at one of the most iconic teams in the league, the Miami Dolphins. And he didn't just play in any position. Jay Fiedler was the quarterback, and he's with us today to share his strategies for success. So, Jay, thanks very much for joining us. And firstly, where in the world are you?
Thank you, Paul. It's great to be here with you. I am near my hometown in Long Island, New York. I live in Garden City now, grew up in Oceanside, and I was fortunate enough in my career to finish my career with the hometown team, the New York Jets. Unfortunately, I had an injury that shortened my stint there, but it was able to bring me back to my hometown, and I've been here for the past 15 years.
Amazing. Well, honestly, it's a real pleasure to have you here, because in the first couple of episodes of this new podcast series that we're doing, we had Leon Lloyd, who played for England in rugby and Leicester Tigers, really successful team. We had Chris Akabusi, who ran in a couple of Olympics, was a world champion, European champion, British record, world record holder in the 400 meter hurdles, and now to have an NFL quarterback on the show. I'm absolutely delighted. So I'm going to start off the way I ask everybody with the first question. What is the definition of success?
You know, I think that becomes different for everyone. The definition of success is, to me, was being my best every single day in whatever it is. I didn't define success for me as just going out and being a great football player. It was also being a great community member, being a great son and brother and family member, being a great teammate. So success is a habit that's lived every single day. It's something that isn't defined by, just one aspect of your life. I think successful people are usually successful in many different areas. That's really how I define it. I think everyone, certainly has a different level of definition for it. But to me, it's an every minute, every hour, every single day type of deal.
Yeah, and it's interesting you've said that, because, when I've asked Leon Lloyd or Chris Akabusi, almost straight away as the first question, they jump straight into the sporting side of their lives and their career. And interesting that you've already broadened it out to outside of sport and just across all areas of your life. And I think that's really important, because one of the things that I want to do, the whole intention with this series, is to try and help people who are interested in psychology and mindset and understanding successful people. And just by listening to us, what can they learn? What can they take away and apply to their own lives? So if you are going to talk about it's not just a sporting thing, then I'd be really interested to understand, what was it that maybe shaped you at the start that helped you become successful?
Well, look, I think it was a combination of a lot of factors. Number one, my competitive nature in everything that I did. I grew up as the younger sibling in the family. I had an older brother who was, successful in his right, athletically, academically, in a lot of things. And, I went to emulate him growing up. He played basketball. I wanted to go play basketball. He started playing football. I wanted to start playing football and would compete against him and all of his friends, whether it was out in the backyard, out in the street, down at the park, or in, the youth leagues and sporting leagues that we participated in. So it started at an early age, just trying to be better than my older brother, trying to, you know, compete with him every day and everything. And then it also stemmed, from the from my parents as well, who stressed, trying your best in everything that you do. For me, I was just ultra competitive in everything, whether it was in the classroom, wanting to, get 100 on every single test and be the top a student, or whether it was on the ball field, wanting to be the top athlete out there. That innate competitive streak that was in me, just carried into every aspect of my life.
And that's, so this is really interesting, because obviously we start talking about kind of nature nurture, and have you got a view on that in terms of, do you think, as you just said, it's innate, it's built in, you were born with it, you maybe developed it as you got older, but do you think it's something that you either have or you haven't got from birth?
Well, I say innate, but I don't know if that, was also just developed, within the, the way that I grew up. Like I said, growing up, having an older brother that did a lot of things and had success, and you wanted to follow that, that example, and then exceed and do better than what he did. So, that's part, that certainly was something that was nurtured in me, whether it was nurtured intentionally or not. And then certainly from my parents, stressing, being your best every single day and applying yourself in everything that you do. So, there's certainly a high level of nurture that, was brought into it as well. And then, my personality and my nature, taking those circumstances and, if I did have a fallback, being able to push myself through it and stay competitive instead of, being sour to a failing experience. So, there's definitely a combination of both, and it can be nurtured. And certainly there's, personality traits, that are innate in everyone that, can carry through, different experiences.
And do you mind telling me about the influence that your dad had on you? Because you're talking about your brother and more how you're trying to compete with him and maybe just trying to be better than yourself in terms of, because he's had maybe older, has a higher level, stronger, all the whole physicality. But in terms of what your dad did, what was it, do you think, that he actually gave you? Because I probably had a similar experience with my dad, but my dad was, had anything to do with professional sport or college sport, but I know your dad did.
Yeah, well, I know we had spoken about this, previously in private conversations, but, certainly my dad had a huge influence on my success, both athletically and overall. My dad was a high school basketball coach and a very successful one, in New York City, basketball, which, through the 70s and 80s, was the mecca of high school, basketball in the United States. Some of the top players in the country all came out of New York, and my dad took his high school teams to two city championships and played in the state championships a few times. So, he was widely regarded as a tremendous coach in the high school ranks throughout New York City. And my experience of, really as a young kid tagging along to his practices, and just watching the way that he coached players, what he expected out of athletes. So it was for me when I, got to a situation where I was part of a team and had a coach that had, certain expectations of me and challenged me and pushed me to be better. That was something that I had already experienced, that I already had seen firsthand by tagging along to those practices with my dad and seeing how the successful players on his team reacted, how the successful players on his team, you know, worked harder than everyone else. You know, so it was something that, you know, I was able to see firsthand how successful athletes applied themselves and got to where they were. And it wasn't, you know, simply by being the best athlete. It was by the work and determination and effort that went in and day in and day out.
And I suppose that sounds like a really, really early grounding in what standards are expected at that level, whether it's high school, college, professional. You know that there is a certain culture around elite sport and elite athleticism. And if you're getting that from such an early age, and whether it's because you just were observing it, or whether because you were starting to pick up that your dad's telling them certain things. I'm just interested, are there any times when maybe your dad had a higher expectation of you because of his job and his role as a coach, and any times that maybe you kind of fell short of that?
You know, not too much. You know, there were certain examples, though. And, you know, I can remember, you know, my dad was never my coach. So, you know, I never played for him. So I never... You know, from a team aspect, from a coach-player relationship, you know, he never put those expectations on me in that way. But, you know, certainly, you know, as a father and, you know, observing me playing all the different sports and having his background in sports, yeah, he definitely challenged me in other ways and, you know, critiqued my play. And you know, we had... you know, lots of conversations after games, you know, that going through different situations and, you know, how I could have done things a little bit differently. And then, you know, I remember, you know, because my dad was a basketball coach, you know, certainly that was, you know, where he coached me up, you know, personally, you know, just helping to train me and get better, you know, a lot more than in other sports. But, you know, I can remember, you know, he never really like came out outside. You know, we had a basketball hoop outside on a driveway. And whenever I was playing, he never came out and actually, you know, did like a one-on-one private lesson with me. You know, what he would do was, you know, teach me certain skills and go back inside and you know, do his work, you know, get ready for a summer camp or whatever else, you know, he needed to do, prepare for his, you know, high school team or for his schoolwork. And you know, he let me kind of, you know, push myself to get better and work on my own. Outside, whether it was with my brother or just, you know, shooting around and working on those skills that he gave me, you know, in that respect. So it taught me that, you know, I had to self-motivate a little bit, you know, more. And, you know, if I wanted to get better and improve my skills, you know, I didn't need to have a coach every day telling me that you have to go out and do this, you have to go out and do this. You know, here's your daily schedule, here's your structure, you know, do 2 hours now and you know, push you to continue to doing that and motivate you. You know, I had to self-motivate myself to, you know, if I wanted to get better, I did it myself. And, you know, if I stayed outside and worked on, you know, those skills and drills for, you know, 20 minutes and came back inside, you know, my dad didn't say anything, but, you know, he certainly let me know that, hey, you know, if you want to get better, 20 minutes isn't going to do it. You know, you have to do a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, it's really, really funny to see how you're kind of getting all the lessons that a professional would get. You're just getting them really early on, and to have those kind of things like accountability and self-motivation and focus from such an early age just really is, you can see how you've already started down that path.
You're listening to the Psychology of Success podcast with Paul McVeigh, sponsored by Moment Digital Limited, live streaming and video producers creating live event content that looks like TV shows, broadcast quality without the cost. Check us out at moment-digital.co.uk.
So, Jay, you're talking a little bit about being with your dad and him as a basketball coach, but of course you played in the NFL. So when did the football side come in?
Well, I grew up playing everything. When I was 5 years old, I was running in cross country meets. I was playing soccer, playing baseball. When I turned six, my older brother had already been playing football. And even though the minimum age for playing in the league was seven, I was close to the cutoff, and my dad kind of fudged my age a little bit to get me in a little bit early. I don't think back then youth sports needed the birth certificates, to prove that you were a certain age. They just trusted the parent and went with that. So, I started playing football when I was 6 years old, tackle football. But again, I was playing everything. I played football in the fall. I played basketball in the winter. Ran track and baseball in the spring. Played soccer. Growing up, so to me, it was going from one sport to the next to the next, and always competing. And I just loved playing, no matter what it was.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the way you do it in America is so different to here. Whereas I would have played, football 12 months of the year and not really done anything else. And if you played rugby, you did that for the majority of the year. Whereas, of course, in America, you have
And
all of the different sports for
it's
different
starting to
seasons.
move, yeah, it's starting to move that way a little bit, here in the States as well.
Yeah. So what I really just want to try and move forward to a point when you've got the college. You're now, I'm guessing you're pretty much established as a quarterback. This is what you think you're now going to be doing. And then, of course, you get an opportunity to become pro because that whole, the draft system, the combine, everything about that just fascinates me. So can you give us a little bit of an insight of what that's like of thinking you're on the verge of turning pro and then almost just sort of sitting and waiting until someone almost cherry picks you and put you into a professional team?
Well, certainly. Look, I didn't go to college thinking that I was going to make it to the NFL. I was fortunate, and I felt like I was fortunate enough that, my talents in football and also in track and field, because in college I did both sports. I played football, and for the first 2 years of college, I was a decathlete and competed in track and field through the winter and spring season. So, I didn't go to college thinking that I was going to be a professional athlete. To me, it was an entryway into getting into a great college and, getting a great education and utilizing that, for the rest of my lifetime and a career from there. Really wasn't until my junior year in college that the prospects of getting to the next level started to become more apparent. I went to Dartmouth College, which is an Ivy League school. At the time, there were very few Ivy League players that made it into the NFL. There were only, I think, two or three in the NFL. At the time that I was, coming up for the draft. There are a lot more now, but at that time, there were less than a handful. The prospects of an Ivy League player making that jump to the NFL was slim. But I had enough success that I was starting to get looked at by the scouts. So scouts were coming around, our school and asking coaches to see tape and coming around some practices. And I got invited to some of the All-Star games through my senior year, had some success there, ended up becoming an MVP in the East-West Shrine Game, my senior, after my senior season, got invited to the combine. So I went out to Indianapolis and competed in the combine and got evaluated there. So, when it came time for the NFL draft in 94, I knew that I was one of the guys that was being looked at, but I didn't know where I was going to end up in that draft. Projections for me were anywhere from, mid to late round, to, becoming a free agent. So, you know, on the day of the draft, obviously, you know, you're sitting there intent, and the coverage wasn't, you know, what it is today, where, you know, it's live coverage, you know, throughout from start to finish of the draft on, you know, 14 different channels throughout cable. You know, back then they had the first round or the first two rounds on live TV, and then, you know, the next day there was just a little ticker on the bottom of the screen, you know, that would go through all the picks. So, you know,
you're sitting at home and you're just watching that Jerry Maguire, is it?
Somewhat, yeah. So, you know, so I was sitting at home just kind of watching the ticker go by and waiting for the next pick and waiting for the next pick to show up. And you know, eventually I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to go outside and do something right now. You know, sitting in on the couch and watching that ticker go by, you know, was draining. You know, and I knew if I was going to get picked, then someone was going to call me to let me know. So, you know, at some point I just said, you know, forget about it. I'm just going to go, you know, do some stuff. And when the call comes, the call comes. And, you know, eventually the draft finished up. I didn't get picked. But immediately after the draft, I had some phone calls from three or four different teams that wanted to bring me in as a free agent. So, you know, that was good validation that, you know, I was wanted and you know, had a chance to compete for a spot on a team. And, you know, ultimately I chose to sign with Philadelphia, with the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, the coach I spoke to immediately after the draft, you know, made it well known that, you know, he'd give me every opportunity to compete. I thought it was a great situation for me. The guy I was competing with wasn't an established person in the organization. He was just there for 1 year. So, you know, the person I was competing as a third stringer, you know, just to make the team, you know, I felt like I matched up pretty well there. And then, you know, the two quarterbacks that were established on the team were both, you know, in their 30s. So, you know, they were a little bit, you know, older in years. So it was a situation where I thought if I made the team and continued on, you know, in 2 or 3 years, you know, there might be an opportunity if these guys retire and, you know, for me to step up. So, you know, that was where the decision came to sign with Philadelphia.
And it's interesting. I'm actually watching the All or Nothing on Amazon at the minute, and it's the season with the Philadelphia Eagles. So all of this is just, you know, I've just been fascinated by it, you know, from growing up in the 80s and watching people like Jerry Rice or, you know, William Perry, the Refrigerator, or John Elway, whoever it happens to be. And suddenly you're there with these probably, you know, iconic teams, iconic names, especially, you know, that's probably the biggest sport in America to play in the NFL. So what was that like, almost getting your first contract, suddenly they're competing with the professionals?
Well, it's funny that you bring up Refrigerator Perry, because, you know, he was actually on that Philadelphia team, you know, with me. So he was a teammate of mine early on. And, you know, I laugh about it because, you know, there's something about, you know, I guess people in the UK and Ireland that they all knew about the fridge, I think, you know, the Bears played out there, and there was he was more popular over in the UK, I think, than you know, than he was here in the States sometimes. But you know, because it's funny, because I went out and played in NFL Europe, you know, a few years later, and he was the one name that came up over and over and over again out in Europe was Fridge Perry, and you know, his popularity in the European circles was tremendous. Yeah, but just digress a little bit on that. It was funny that you mentioned him and brought him up. You know, but just getting back to your question, you know, going into that situation, you know, I think, you know, as a young player, as a rookie, you know, there's always that trepidation of, do you fit in? Do you belong here? I think I didn't get to that point in my athletic career, without a lot of self-confidence. So, I brought that self-confidence with me going into that situation, saying, hey, listen, I know I'm not going to be, the starting quarterback right away. I wasn't, brought in here really to compete for that level. But, I can compete with these guys, and I know I belong here. And, I know I'm going to go out and show that I belong. And that was my attitude going into that situation. Every opportunity that I got to get out on the field, number one, I prepared myself thoroughly and diligently, studying and making sure that, when I was called upon to run a play in practice or to execute a drill, I was ready and I knew exactly what I was doing and could direct other guys to be in the right place at the right time as well. So, having that command of an offensive system in football is, the first way to show your teammates and your coaches that you belong there. The guys that are hesitant, the guys that, don't know exactly what they're doing, that, call a play and then have to ask, what's going on here or don't fully know it. That resonates quickly and teammates see that, with people. So, especially as a quarterback, as a leader of the team, you're not in total command of everything that's going on. It's going to get noticed. So, that's the first thing going in and competing was, making sure that, I knew, every single play and what we were, trying to accomplish on every single play better than anyone else on that field. And then number two, obviously, is you got to go out and physically execute what's asked upon you. So, those two things, were the biggest key for, me going into that situation and showing the coaches and showing my teammates that I belong there.
And Jay, this is starting to see some similarities and overlaps with other people that I've spoken to, as in Leon and Chris Akabusi in the last couple of shows, just to start to see how all of the things we talk about, whether it's an elite athlete, whether it's someone who's been highly successful in business, there seems to be a whole lot of common themes coming out. And so it's the performance of actually doing it, almost doing your job, doing exactly what you need to do at a very high level. But then you just mentioned it there, and it's leadership. As the quarterback, you're essentially the head coach on the field. You're directing everything. Yeah. Can you give us some insight into, A, how do you develop, or how did you develop that leadership style? And then also, when you have to remember so many different plays, just give us a little bit of an insight into someone like myself that I never had to remember anything going on the football field because everything was instinctual. So you have a completely opposite end of the spectrum and experience of being a professional athlete.
Yeah, well, certainly, to answer the first part, with the leadership style, a lot of that really harked back on, growing up with my dad, who was a coach, and seeing the way he led his team and the way he coached his team up. And, like you said, the quarterback is really the coach out on the field. So you have to develop those relationships with your teammates and not only, help to motivate them, but also, help to instruct them and get them in the right situation. And, as a quarterback, you have, more control over what's going on than any other position out there. So, you want to make sure that, everyone in that huddle and everyone on your team is on the same page as you. Because, when you're controlling the situation, you want to make sure that, your offensive linemen are performing the right blocking scheme that's called upon, and if you have to make an adjustment to it because you see a blitz coming from one area of the defense or another, you want to make sure that communication gets through and you know, where you think you're protected as a quarterback is exactly where those linemen are going to protect you. And then, you know, translating that also, you know, to the wide receivers and running backs, you know, the same thing. You want to make sure that, you know, when there's an adjustment to be made, that everyone is on the same page as you, because, you know, if there's something that's going on and they're not doing what you expect them to do, then it's going to throw a cog into the whole system. And you know, create some hesitancy. And, you know, as you say, you know, as a soccer or, you know, what you call a football player, you know, it's instinctual. You know, for us, it's the same thing. You know, you have to play with a ton of instincts. And you know, if those instincts get interrupted by, you know, a teammate being in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know, it creates hesitancy, and hesitancy is you know, the root of failure in sports. Yeah. And you know, so, you know, you want to make sure that you're confident and accountable to every single teammate that you have out there, and that your teammates are accountable to you in order to have success in the sport of American football.
Today's podcast is sponsored by CSS Investments, a London-based regulated stockbroker that offers a bespoke advisory investment service for stocks and shares. I've personally used CSS for over 5 years now and happily recommend their services. You can find out more at css-investments.com. But please do remember that, as with all investing, your capital is at risk. Now, Jay, can you give us a little bit of an insight into what it's like when you're the quarterback, but of course there's a number of quarterbacks that are all going for the one position, and of course only one can play at any one time. So how do you deal with the sitting around, not getting the opportunity to perform? You said you were a very confident guy, but what happens to that confidence whenever you're either not given the chance to perform, or when you are given the chance, you don't perform?
Yeah, you know, it's a difficult situation for certain people. And I, you know, certainly my career path took me in many different, you know, ways, you know, through that struggle. You know, like I mentioned, I started in Philadelphia. I eventually made the team as a rookie free agent and, you know, stayed on, you know, for 2 years. In 1994 and 95 with the Eagles, but I was a third string quarterback. I got a few reps in preseason games to keep myself sharp, but, you know, throughout the rest of the season, you know, I was really what we call a scout team quarterback, you know, where I was running throughout the week the opposing team's offense to get our defense ready to play. To show them the looks that the opposing team is going to give them. So, you know, I probably spent more time playing as the opponent, the opposing quarterback, than, you know, working through, you know, our own offense in practice throughout those years. Now, you know, I still had to prepare myself as if I was going to be the starter, but, you know, without any reps. So, you know, if anything did happen, an injury or you know, non-performance by the starting quarterbacks, you know, I had to be prepared and ready to go without, you know, getting any physical reps to do that. So, you know, it takes a real, you know, a lot of visualization. It takes a lot of, you know, being present at every single practice, seeing, you know, what's going on and trying to visualize yourself in the situation as a play is going on, you know, throughout practice, and trying to see yourself from, you know, the perspective of the quarterback that's in the pocket, and, you know, a ton of film work to prepare yourself for that as well. But, you know, again, you know, I spent 2 years there. I spent another year out of football before I got a chance to play in NFL Europe and in the World League of Football with the Amsterdam Admirals in '97. it was. So, you know, for, you know, 3.5 years, really, I didn't play, you know, a truly competitive game, you know, other than a few preseason reps in the NFL until I got to Amsterdam. So, you know, you have to, you know, have amazing confidence in yourself, you know, to know that you could go out there and still compete, you know, without having those competitive reps. You know, I can't imagine, you know, you as a soccer player, as a, you know, going out and taking, you know, 3.5 years of, you know, really just doing drills and not competing out on the field and thinking that, you know, you could just go out there and do it. So, you know, the experience, you know, definitely, you know, breeds confidence. So, you know, when you don't have that experience, it's difficult to retain that. So, you know, it takes a lot of you know, inside fortitude to retain that confidence and be able to, you know, project that to everyone else and you know, prove it to yourself that you could go out and do it.
So it almost just, suppose, gives the, you know, the reason why you just need to hang around, you know, because there could be an opportunity. But for a lot of people, they could have given up during those 3.5 years. And it's so ironic you're talking about that, because I made my debut in the Premier League in 1997 and then didn't play another competitive game until 2000. So it was 3 years of kind of doing what you're doing, just being the person who's always the opposition against the main team and never actually properly competing. But just the ability to hang around, you know, there's got to be something just said for that.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and I talk about it all the time. You know, to me, you know, most guys in my situation, you know, would have had a 2-year career in the NFL and, you know, moved on to something else. But, you know, I stuck with it and, you know, I persevered through the challenges of, you know, being out of the league, of being cut by a couple teams, of, you know, traveling out to Europe. You know, just to get some experience of spending 2 seasons at home volunteer coaching with the local university, with Hofstra University, you know, just to keep myself sharp and keep myself around the game, you know, and you know, keep myself available for that, you know, next opportunity that, you know, whether it came or not, you know, I didn't know, you know, if I was going to get afforded another opportunity to get back into the NFL, but and I had plenty of people telling me that, you know, it was never going to happen. You know, I had an assistant coach for you know, the local New York Jets, who practiced right across the street from Hofstra University. Their practice facility at the time was actually on the Hofstra campus. So you know, I was near those guys, but you know, never had a ton of access to them at the time. But you know, at a coach's clinic that my high school coach put on, you know, I had a conversation with you know, one of the NFL coaches, and you know, he basically put it to me straight out. He said, you know, your situation, you know, were undrafted free agent, not too many people knew about you. You never got any, you know, real experience for 2 years. When you were on the roster, you've been out of the league for a couple of years, you know, the chances of you getting back in are slim. You know, you ought to just take that, you know, Dartmouth degree that you got and you know, go to Wall Street like, you know, all my other classmates and alumni and utilize your education and, you know, go to the next career. You know, so
you wouldn't put him down, you know, as a motivational speaker, would you? He's not exactly helping.
Well, you know, to be honest, that probably it probably motivated me more than anything else, because, you know, the want to prove people wrong, you know, for an athlete, for a competitor, for you know, someone that has, you know, ultimate self confidence. You know, you almost want people to doubt you, because it gives you that extra motivation, you know, more so than, you know, people that are on your side that saying you could do it, you can, you know, you could go out there, you know, just stick to it. You know, sometimes it takes, you know, one or two people to doubt you, you know, to really push you even harder to want to overcome that. You know, you see that across, you know, a lot of levels of success, you know, people, you know, want to prove the doubters wrong. And that's a huge motivation, you know, for people, you know, that can overcome that and that, you know, have the ability to say, you know what, people are doubting me, but, you know, I still have confidence in myself and I'm going to push through and persevere, you know, through these challenges to get to the other side.
So let me ask you this, because obviously you have had a career in an NFL where probably millions of kids who've grown up in America would love to have done that. I'm sure there's loads of kids around the world who'd want to do it now because the NFL just goes, is such a global sport now. So how do you go from this New York Jets coach standing as you're an assistant coach at a university, volunteering, not really getting your opportunity, to replacing Dan Marino at the Miami Dolphins?
Well, look, I was really fortunate, and you know, as much as I talk about you know, my ability to persevere and remain available to come back and compete, you know, back in the league, it still took a team and a coach, you know, to open that door for me, to just, you know, crack it open for me, you know, because, you know, I couldn't just walk into a team and say, hey, I'm here, you know, I want to compete for a spot. You know, you have to be invited in to do that. So, you know, for those 2 years I was out of the league, you know, I was working hard. I was, you know, training myself, you know, coaching wide receivers on the Hofstra team. So I was throwing the ball, you know, every day to the receivers and getting some extra work myself, you know, to prepare myself physically, you know, for the challenge of coming back. But, you know, really the opportunity came about when, you know, really had a last ditch effort, you know, to get back into the league. I sent out letters and videotapes to every single head coach and coordinator and quarterback coach throughout the league with the help of, you know, my high school coach and my, my agent. You know, we put together a whole package and, you know, sent it out to everyone and we got one response, out of the, you know, 30 teams in the league and hundreds of, envelopes that we sent out to different coaches and personnel people. Only one person called, but that's all I needed. And the Minnesota Vikings, had a quarterback coach, named Chip Myers, who, his son was basically best friends with a guy who played on my Dartmouth team. It was a freshman when I was a senior. So he was really the only guy in the league that actually watched my college games. And you know, so he remembered my senior year, you know, two or three comeback games that I had, you know, the way I competed, the way, you know, I brought the team to success. So, you know, he was the one guy who said, you know what, this guy's a competitive guy. Let's give him a shot. Let's bring him in. And you know, that was all I needed. Was that little crack in the door to open up, and I was going to just shove it right open and go in. So, you know, I got invited to Minnesota to compete for a spot. They brought in four or five different quarterbacks to work out. And after the workout, I impressed them enough for them to invite me to training camp. And, you know, that was my entry back into the NFL after, you know, 2 years out. So, you know, ultimately stuck on with Minnesota in that 98 season. So I was third string quarterback. One of the quarterbacks ahead of me got injured. So I was a backup quarterback for a good majority of the season. Ended up getting a few plays in late in the games for that team. You know, that Minnesota team that I was on in 1998 was one of the, you know, better teams you know, that whole decade, you know, we set records in offensive scoring and yardage. And, you know, so the quarterback ahead of me, you know, certainly had a lot of tremendous success. And, you know, there was one game he got injured, you know, the previous week. And, you know, there was looked like I was going to get my first opportunity to start. And then he ended up coming back and recovering off his injury. And they announced it, you know, the morning of the game that he was going to start. So, you know, my opportunity didn't come, you know, to really play in a significant role in a game that year. But, you know, the following year, I ended up getting picked up by Jacksonville as a free agent. They brought me in, and Tom Coughlin was the coach who ended up, you know, winning a couple Super Bowls with the New York Giants. Later on, but you know, he was probably the first head coach I had been with that really didn't care where you came from, didn't play any politics in the sport, didn't care what your salary was, if you were a first round pick, if you were a free agent, you know, if you were the guy, you know, the best guy out on the field, you were gonna go play. If you were the next guy, you're gonna be the backup, and you know, when your time comes, we expect you to perform just as good as the starting quarterback. And you know, that was really the situation I had in Jacksonville. I went in there, I competed, won the backup job, and ended up you know, playing in a few significant games that season. Got my first start right at the end of the season, last game of the regular season, and you know, had a lot of success in that first game, helped propel our team to home field advantage in the playoffs. And then we ended up playing against the Miami Dolphins in the first round of the playoffs. And that was really what helped get me down to Miami the following year, was my success in the games before we played Miami and in the game against Miami. You know, it allowed their personnel people and their coaches to see, you know, what I could do out on the field. And the following year, when Dan Marino retired, and the Dolphins were looking for a quarterback to come in and replace him, you know, they signed me. They brought me in, and I was there to compete against the previous year's backup, Damon Heward, you know, for that starting spot.
Wow, so it's such an up and down journey just to be able to get that opportunity to have that starting spot, and of course, you know, follow in the footsteps of someone as successful and so high profile as Dan Marino. So when suddenly you're arriving in Miami, you're playing there, it must be such an amazing experience because you're finally getting your opportunity.
You're listening to the Psychology of Success podcast with Paul McVeigh, sponsored by Moment Digital Limited, live streaming and video producers creating live event content that looks like TV shows, broadcast quality without the cost. Check us out at moment-digital.co.uk.
Now, Jay, you talked earlier about leadership. You talked about, you know, having to be able to perform when you get your opportunity, but suddenly you are in front of a really successful team, and it's your job to continue that success and hopefully make them even more successful. How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, again, it's, you know, it goes back to, you know, preparing yourself for the situation and maintaining that confidence level in yourself. You know, for me going into that situation, Miami, you know, I knew I wasn't coming in to be another Dan Marino. You know, I was going in to be, you know, Jay Fiedler, the quarterback of the Dolphins, who, you know, can bring success to this team in the ways that I know how. You know, and that was differently than the way that Dan Marino played the game. You know, I didn't play the same way that he did. You know, I utilize a lot of different skill sets and you know, different ways to you know, to have success in the offense and to win games you know, as the leader of the team. So For me, it was, number one, going out there every single day and proving myself to my teammates and to my coaches to win that respect. And that's, the first, that was the first key, for me and becoming the quarterback and becoming the leader of the team was to earn the respect of everyone around you. And you do that by, number one, showing that you, know the system cold, like I talked about earlier, that everything that's going on, that you could be, another coach out on the field and you could direct it, direct everyone in the right spot in the right time. And number two, proving to them that when the time comes and you need to execute, you could go out there and do it. Whether that started out in preseason games and making plays there or throughout as the season went along, we had plenty of opportunities to show that we could come back from a deficit to win a game, to make the big play at the right time, perform and win games there. So that respect and that, mutual, respect throughout the team and from, teammates and coaches, that develops over time. And that's something that you have to continue to develop, as a leader of the team. And then, the next part of it for me was, going out there and not only, proving it within the team, but knowing in that situation, there's a lot of outside distractions because of, who I was following. Everyone wanted to make the comparisons of, this guy is following Dan Marino. He's not doing, what he did. They may be winning games, but he didn't throw for, 400 yards and five touchdowns, to win it. So, you have to make sure that, those distractions from the outside, from the media, from, a fan base, from, the talk radio, stations that, love to debate, everything from, what you eat for breakfast to, how you tie your shoelaces, before the game, and they dissect every single, inch of it, but they don't really know what's going on.
Of course.
But they don't really know what's going on behind the scenes and the work that goes into it. So, you have to keep those distractions at bay and not listen to, any things that really don't, have any effect on, your ability to go out and prepare and win games.
Yeah, and interesting, as I said a couple of times, that we spoke to an Olympian, Chris Akabusi, on the last show, and it seems very much it's the analogy of just stay in your lane. Just stay in your lane and just carry on doing what you want to do. And listen, Jay, this has been so interesting for me. I've got such a fascination with not just the NFL, NBA. I've got so interested in American sports. So I've got a couple of questions that I want to round up with. So my second last question is, what has been the price of your success? If there is one, of course.
For me, with my situation, it took me a long time to get to, the level where I had an opportunity to become a starting quarterback that was afforded me down in Miami. So, that took me from Philadelphia for 2 years. I went to Cincinnati for, a few weeks, in training camp there. I went back home, to Long Island. I was coaching. I went out to Europe. I went back to Minnesota. I went to Jacksonville. So for 7 or 8 years, before I, or 5 or 6 years before I got to Miami, you know, I was never able to you know, settle down to get roots anywhere in a community to, you know, create long-term relationships. So, you know, from a social aspect, you know, there definitely were a lot of sacrifices in that. You know, I stayed focused on, you know, my job at hand, and everything else, you know, was put on the back burner. You know, and then, you know, because of that, you know, journey through the NFL, you know, one of the things I always thought I would get into was the coaching profession. And, you know, I expected that when I was done playing, I'd, you know, go into coaching and become a college or a pro coach. But, you know, I spent a 10-year career over 12 seasons, basically, you know, moving around 9 or 10 different times. And I was just tired of that kind of lifestyle. And I didn't want to jump into, you know, the coaching profession where I know, you know, coaches kind of jump around and they, you know, spend a few years in one place and move on to the next opportunity and the next opportunity. You know, I wanted to just kind of settle down and put some roots in the ground somewhere. You know, it was, I think that decision ultimately, you know, helped to get me to where I am now. And I'm in a great place, you know, running our family business, which is a summer camp business, and, you know, allows me to coach up, some youth athletes and you know, work with them and provide them, you know, a great opportunity, to spend the summers, upstate New York and in a you know, beautiful country setting, and play sports all day. So, you know, as much as it was a challenge and sacrifice, you know, of having to move around and having to, you know, jump from city to city and home to home, for a number of years, it also, you know, put me in an opportunity to, you know, ultimately find, you know, a great profession and work with my family. And you know, I'm certainly extremely happy with where I'm at right now.
Well, it sounds amazing. You're definitely selling it to me. And I don't know if there's space for a little 4-foot-nothing Irish guy to come up and try and be a quarterback.
Of course. Let's go.
You would be one heck of a coach if you could teach me how to be a quarterback. I wouldn't be able to see over the linebacker. Anyway, last question, Jay, I've got
for you.
We'll
get you on the run. We'll get you out of the pocket a little bit.
I might be able to do that. What is your definition of success in 2021?
My definition of success in 2021. You know, again, I think it just goes back to what we spoke about right at the beginning. You know, and my definition, I don't think it changed from, you know, when I grew up to where it is right now. You know, my definition of success is, you know, being someone that, you know, works to be his best in every aspect of his life, his or her life, in every aspect of their profession, of their family life, of their community life. You know, no matter what it is, you know, being a great teammate, being a great community member, being you know, a great athlete, a great professional in whatever field you're involved in, you know, and putting the work in to get there. You know, it doesn't come easy. Success doesn't come easy, and you know, you have to wanna compete every day, and you have to wanna you know, try and do your best in every aspect that you involve yourself in. And you know, that's a constant. I don't think that changes from 2020 to 2021 to, you know, 2050 down the road. You know, to me, that definition of success, you know, has remained a constant from when I was a little kid, you know, 5 years old, running in cross country meets, to today when I, you know, compete to make the Sports Academy at Brookwood Camps the best summer camp in the U.S.
Jay, that is absolutely outstanding. Thank you very much for your time. It's been so interesting, so insightful, so fascinating just listening to you and hearing about the successful career you had. So, Jay, thanks very much for joining us. And thank you for joining us too. We are going to be back on Tuesday for another live show with sports psychologist Jamil Qureshi, and he'll be joining us on Tuesday, the 20th of April at 2 p.m. So please join us then, and thanks very much for watching. Well, I think I should apologize firstly to everybody who's just listened to that episode, because I think I just turned into a fanboy listening to Jay Fiedler talk about his NFL career and being such a big fan of the NFL all through my life as a young kid, as I mentioned, all the way through to today. You know, I just really love it, and there's something about it that really appeals. But listening to how Jay went through probably a 15, 16-year career and having so many disappointments year after year until finally he gets his big opportunity at the Miami Dolphins, and then trying to fill the shoes of Dan Marino must have been so difficult. But he said he just wanted to do it his way, and that's great leadership for me. So I really hope you enjoyed that episode. I hope you can join us again the next time on the Psychology of Success, because we have Jamil Qureshi, who's a sports psychologist, and I think you will love listening to Jamil. Please join us next time. A final thank you to Moment Digital, who have produced today's live show, and that's Neil Stainsby and Peter Wright. Hayley Brasnett is the editor for all of the episodes that go up on iTunes and Spotify. Dave Webster has been our researcher, and Emily Drake does all of our social media marketing, so we can get out every single episode of The Psychology of Success.